All right. What's up, everybody? It's pretty good. I'm trying to figure out a way to get these subs to fit in my vehicle. I just hadn't figured out the logistics of it quite yet. Hey, so I wanted to kind of make mention of one thing. If you are walking around the church or like when you were coming in, and if it looks like we have 12 to 18-year-old zombies, they're not. They had a lock-in last night, and some of them have not been to sleep yet. Like, still going. They're staying awake. It's amazing. So I'm probably going to end that streak here in about 15 minutes, because when people start talking, right, it's just like, and somebody said, that's just a normal Sunday. I'm like, you jerks. Bunch of jerks. Hey, so we're continuing our series, like Shelley said, our series this week called Triggered. Our series for the month is called Triggered, and we're actually wrapping it up. We'll start a new series next week. You know what's funny? I think sometimes we try so hard. Is anybody else guilty of this? Sometimes I try hard. Do you know any tryhards? If you're not raising your hand, you are the tryhard. So I try hard. I try hard to be clever and creative sometimes and figure out new ways to say old things, right? Because I think we just want to keep it fresh. And so next week we're starting a series, and I was trying to think of like this really clever title for it and how we could, you know, I love word plays and I love puns and I love alliteration. So I was just thinking of something that we could do, and this is what the title of the series is. Content. Like, that's all I could come up with. And you know what's so funny is it kind of, to me, the simplicity of it ties back into the theme of contentment, right? Because we try to do too much sometimes, and we think that's what makes us content, and that's not it at all. And so that's just a preview of where we'll be going for the next few weeks. Today, like I said, we're finishing up our series called Triggered. If you haven't been here for any of it, Triggered it's a term that is used in society to explain kind of this emotionally supercharged state that people get into. Now, if you were getting upset about the right things, that would be acceptable, right? And we'll talk a little bit about that today. The problem is that most people are getting upset about trivial things, things that don't actually matter all of that much in the grand scheme of things. And so triggered is kind of this term that we use to describe the state of being where you are emotionally supercharged. And it's usually something as simple as this. Somebody has the audacity to have an opinion that doesn't match yours. And you're going to get all upset about it and let them know all about it with all of your rage and anger and vitriol, right? And so that's kind of what triggered is. And you see this a lot in the world that we live in. You see this a lot in Shelly gets so frustrated because I watch TV. I love, for whatever reason, right? So people like music. Music's cool. I like talk radio. I'm old. It's cool. I'm 90. Even what, like, entertainment-wise, as far as TV goes, like, I don't watch, like, a lot of movies and shows. I prefer, like, talk shows back and forth, right? And so Shelly gets so irritated because every time people are talking, they're yelling at each other, right? And so the yelling, the anger, the vitriol comes from, well, they have different opinions, and so they are triggered at each other because they have different ideologies on what, you know, whatever the particular topic is. So we've covered so far in this series that acceptance doesn't necessarily mean approval. You know that I don't have to approve of everything that you do to accept you, and the greatest example of this is Jesus in the gospel, right? Like, Jesus was a friend of sinners, and we have such a hard time understanding that because we want to dismiss people that we don't agree with or who are doing things that we don't like. We can accept and not necessarily approve. And then the second week, we talked about how misplaced fear is what causes us to be triggered. It triggers the triggered. And so when you fear the wrong things, then you're setting yourself up to be triggered. Like, some people are so afraid of what other people think that they live in this place of fear and then ultimately being triggered. Why don't we instead, Jesus said it like this. He's like, hey, instead of fearing man who can kill the body, why don't you fear God who can kill the body and the soul forever? Right? And it's just a perspective shift, right? Like, what people think of us, does it really matter? Thank you, Shelly. Shelly's like, no. Does it really matter? Now, here, let me, I'm going to set somebody free this morning. I'm going to help you out, right? So all of the people that you think are so important that you're trying to impress right now, you probably won't even be friends with them in 2 years. Like, you probably won't. Like, man, it is crazy. I'm aging. I'm not old. Shelly gets mad at me when I say that, but I've seen a little bit, right? I've done a little bit. I've seen some things. I've done some things, and I've done a little bit of life. And what I've learned is that, man, people come and people go. Don't try to impress them, Right? Just be who the heck God has called you to be and stop trying to impress everybody else. Fear God, not people. Anyway, that was the second week. And then last week, we talked about, hey, let's be known more for what we're for than what we're against. Y'all know that we love enemies? That was not a rhetorical question, but that's cool. We'll treat it as such. We love having an enemy. We love having somebody that we can be combative towards. We love conflict, right? And so what we do is when somebody does something or has an opinion or ideology that we don't agree with, we force them to the other side. We create and make enemies out of them. And the way that we do this is by letting them know what we're against. Like, I'm not for that, and I'm against this, and I'm against that. What if we let them know what we're for rather than what we're against? And all of that stuff is on iTunes. It's podcasted. So look it up. It's cool, right? So this week, we're going to do something just a little bit different. We're going to look at a cultural term to explain our cultural term triggered, right? So there's another term that kind of is associated oftentimes with this idea of being triggered. And so what it is, you guys are probably familiar with this. If you're under, let's say, 50, you're probably familiar with it. If you're not, I'm gonna teach you something today. And if you're over 50 and you know it, you're definitely culturally tuned in, right? And it's the expression, stay woke, stay woke. Now, how many of you have never heard that expression? It's okay. You can be honest in church. Everybody's heard the expression. Good. We don't have to do any kind of teaching or background, right? So there's a phrase, stay woke, or kind of the idea of being woke that is oftentimes now associated with this also concept of being triggered. Now, I don't like this expression. I think it's one that's overused. It's overplayed because everybody's woke. And there's usually like a hint of arrogance to it. Like, I know something that you don't know, therefore I'm better than you. And that's kind of what it's become. Now, I think originally that's not what it was. Originally, it was about awareness. It was about the real situations going on that real people are dealing with. And we need to be woke to those things. We need to see those things. But I think it's shifted. I think it's become politicized. And it's now become kind of this supportive of a Marxist agenda where if you don't see what I see, I'm better than you and you're wrong. And that's kind of where it's gone. But we're going to redeem it. We're going to take it and make it right. So anyway, has anybody offended yet? Because let's just get everybody triggered, right? I think it has, in its origin, it was originally used well and well-intended, but I think it's become something other than that now. So we're going to make it what we want to make it, right? So the idea today, or the title for today, is to stay woke. And so where it's become kind of this line of division and demarcation is, time out, is the hazer still on? Can you turn the hazer off? Or is somebody vaping? And put up your vape pen. I mean, dude, I'm not going to preach too long. You can wait 30 more minutes and then you can go vape outside, right? So I won't give Tavian too much crap. My son is actually running lights and he hasn't been asleep yet. So you made one mistake. That's not bad. So we're going to look at this whole stay woke thing and kind of just a couple of different perspectives and angles on it. And the first one is really kind of one of the recurring themes of this series, and it's about priorities. So we're going to call this point passion priorities. Now, what we're not saying in this whole triggered series, what we are not trying to communicate is that we're supposed to be apathetic. That's not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is that, hey, we are supposed to be passionate people, and you are going to have things that you get fired up about. There are things that get you motivated or emotionally charged, but I think that we have to have priorities, right? Like, there are certainly things about your life that should kind of, you know, instigate or cause you to have very strong emotions. But I think ultimately we have to remember who we are and what is most important, right? One of the things that we've said a couple of times throughout the series is our goal, at least one of the goals, is to remind us that we are more than goats and donkeys. For all you political people, hey, you are even more. Now, this may be shocking because we're moving towards a society where I am no longer allowed, and this may be too much, but I'm going to do it anyway because I just feel like that right now. We are moving towards in a society where I will no longer be able to identify myself or qualify myself as a white male because we're moving towards where that offends me that you think you're white. Well, my biology says I'm white. My sunburn show says I'm white. Right? And so I don't even know how we got off on this stuff. Let me go back to my note. Oh, yeah, you are more than your ethnicity, too, also, right?
And look, these things matter, right? These things are important. These are things that we can and should be passionate about, but they are not the thing. Our nationality, like we're Americans, and Americans tend to be very nationalistic. We tend to be very proud of the country that we live in and you know, proud of what we have as Americans. You know, people literally risk their lives to come here to live what we call everyday life, right? This American dream. And so we should be nationalistic. We should be proud. All of those things are good, but all of those things should be secondary to who it is that we are called to be as followers of Jesus. That is first and foremost. Everything else has to be secondary. So it's passion priorities. That has to be our highest passion. Everything else needs to kind of come in line underneath that. Now, what happens is because being triggered and being passionate is such an emotional state, right? It's emotionally driven. I don't know if you know this or not, but emotions are like the tail that wags the dog. And I love that imagery, right, of a tail literally wagging the dog, because, you know, it's so funny when a tail is like, wah, 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 but then just to imagine the dog going, wah, 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 I don't know, just really, it's always been very interesting to me, obviously not to you, that's cool. So emotions are good. Emotions, they have a tremendous amount of value. Like, let's be honest, right? Some of the strongest forces in the world are derivative or directly connected to emotion. Love is one of the greatest forces in the world. Hope, I think, is tied to emotion. And again, one of the greatest forces in the world. But emotions are kind of, they're supposed to support the mission, right? The mission for us would be to be followers of Jesus. And those emotions should support that. It's kind of the constructs. It's the framework that helps propel us forward. Now, what happens is when we get everything out of sorts, we get out of whack, then the emotion starts to become the mission. And the emotion was never intended to be the mission. And when you get triggered, what happens is because of the emotion that's involved, the things that are not the right things become elevated to the highest place in your life. They become the most important things. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, it says this. And I love the way it says some of the things that it says, because I feel like when Paul is talking here, like it's something that we can all understand. He says this: don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments. Man, I love this. Or did somebody say, or people? Now, unfortunately, let me help you out. Unfortunately, we are not going to be able to avoid all stupid people, because sometimes they in your family, sometimes you work with them. Some of y'all married to them, right? You poor thing. So don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. Don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know they produce quarrels. Do you know what that says to me? That says to me that some of y'all need to go home and delete your Facebook. But y'all didn't want to hear that, right? So don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, yet you still think you can influence somebody's opinion by calling them names on Facebook and going back and forth and back and forth. I have never ever seen an argument won or a person influenced through that foolishness that be happening out there, right? So, verse 24, and the Lord's servant, that's us, must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. So we're not supposed to be quarrelsome. We're not supposed to be divisive. We're not supposed to be, you know, just constantly arguing and telling everybody what we think about it, right? Because we have a world. This is kind of the world that we live in, right? This is antithetical to the world that we live in. This not being divisive, not being quarrelsome. The world that we live in is tell everybody exactly what you think. You don't necessarily have to have any facts to back it up, but your emotions, if they're strong enough, they will convince people, right? No? Okay, good. I'll continue. I'll move on. So this is not the way that the world that we live in approaches relational interaction, right? So for us as followers of Jesus, it's a solid reminder that what is most important is coming about it in the right way. Look, you can be passionate. You can have priorities in your life about the passions that you have, but they have to be secondary to the priority. So they have to take a back seat to our lives as followers of Jesus. You have things. In fact, let's talk about it kind of just from a different angle, maybe just a little bit. So you have things that you're passionate about that maybe Even if it's not the thing, right? It's not necessarily, hey, I'm a follower of Jesus. Maybe you have things that you're passionate about that God is going to use you to make a difference in that space in, right? Maybe you're passionate about things that God will use you to bring about some change in those areas. But they have to be secondary, right? They cannot take the place of, they cannot be elevated to the place of the main thing, the thing, and it's following Jesus. One way I've heard this said is that your misery may be your ministry. Y'all know what happens? Let me kind of just give you some insight as to how we do things. Because, again, we just like to talk. Like, nobody likes to do anything. Everybody just likes to talk about what needs to be done. God, that is so frustrating. Just shut up and do something. My gosh. And so I love people. I am drawn to people who have a bend towards action, towards doing. Like the talking, I'm just like, I just get irritated and like my blood starts to boil. And I'm like, you've been talking about the same thing for 10 years. Get off your arse and do something, right? Like for God's sake, because you're fixing to die and you're going to live. I mean, you know, like, you know, it could happen, right? And we'll talk about all that more in just a minute. So your misery may be your ministry. Now, here's the trick. So passion, we're going to have them. They have to be secondary to our highest priority, our highest objective in life, which is to be a follower of Jesus. Now, we should pursue our passions. We should you know, integrate them into our life. It should be something that we do with the time that we have here on earth. But you have to go about it the right way. There is a right way and a wrong way to do things. You can do the right things, and if you go about it the wrong way, it's the wrong thing. It's not what you say, it's how you say what you say. Isn't that the truth? I love dogs. If you don't like dogs, something's wrong with you. And if you like cats, there's definitely something wrong with you. But I love dogs. Now, here's the thing about dogs. They are a perfect example of it's not what you say, but how you say it. Like, we have a golden retriever. Isn't she a golden retriever? She's dumb as a brick, man. Like, she's supposed to be so smart. We have French doors on the back of our house. She literally busted the French doors down to get in the house because she was scared of the rain while we were at church. And so I show up, we go in the house. It looks like a crime scene, like CSI, because she busted the glass. She cut her paw. I mean, there's blood everywhere. And I'm like, somebody died. And if they didn't, they fit into, right? And so she's not bright. Like, she is, but she does really dumb things. And so I'll say things to her sometimes. I'm like, you're so stupid. You're so stupid. It's not what I say, but it's how I say it. Because she's like, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. Right, just so excited that I'm talking to her like that. And I don't know why we felt we had to go there. So anyway, it's not what you say. It's not what you say. It's how you say it. If you come in all hot and triggered, you make enemies. If you come in triggered, right, and we know this. We know this about ourselves. If somebody comes at us, we immediately throw up our walls and we're defensive. If somebody comes in with, I don't know, grace, if somebody comes in with, I don't know, gentleness, we're much more inclined to listen to what it is they have to say. If you come in hot and triggered, you make enemies. If you come in with grace and gentleness, you just might build a bridge. After all, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar, right? I'm still working that one out. Sometimes I like vinegar, but I'm working on the honey, right? Not literally, but I'm saying sometimes you just want it. People are so frustrating, and I know I'm frustrating. And sometimes the vinegar, it seems right, but it ain't right. It's not right. The honey is what's right. So the first point is passion priorities. The second point is this, and we're going to call this one a woke exception. Did y'all like the stay woke thing? Am I the only one that liked that? And most of y'all are like, you so dumb. Remember what I said about trying real hard? That's what I was doing. So the next point is a woke exception. I think there are exceptions to this kind of idea that we have to be or we should be gentle and calm all of the time. Some of you are like, all right, finna get good, right? Because we like, y'all know what we like? Maybe you don't. Maybe you like hippie Jesus. Maybe you like Jesus like sitting around the campfire playing the acoustic guitar singing Kumbaya. Like maybe that's the Jesus that you are drawn to, kind of, you know, it magnetically draws you in. The Jesus that I like is the Jesus that went into the temple, and he made a whip, and he started flipping tables, and he drove them out. Now, when I read that he drove them out,
what I see is like, you know, get on out of here, right? Now, if you didn't grow up in the country, you don't know what that is. But that's hostile. That's real. And so this is one of the things that, like, I'm drawn to about Jesus. This again, kind of flying off the handle, triggered Jesus. Because everybody, they want to bring up, this is what we like to do. We like to bring up this one isolated incident where Jesus gets triggered and act as if that's the norm. And it's not. Let's read the story. Matthew chapter 21, verses 12 and 13. Jesus entered the temple courts and drove out all who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of money changers and the benches of those selling doves. It is written, he said to them, my house will be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. So the story goes that Jesus went to the temple, and basically they had turned it into Walmart. And he's like, this ain't happening. I'm not going to go down like this. So he started, you know, flipping tables and driving people out. And here's what I think is the exception to the rule. The exception to the rule is that there are times when your passions and your life as a follower of Jesus coincide, right? There are times where you have every right to stand up for the right thing. And I think there are even times where a visible demonstration of frustration is okay. But it's not all the time, right? Because some people act like it's every day, not just every day, but every waking minute of every day. Now, let's do statistics. How many of you guys like math? Nobody. Cool. So let's just say, hypothetically, Jesus started his ministry at 30, and you know, scholars think that Jesus died at 33-ish. So let's say he had 3 years of fruitful ministry. We have on record one isolated incident of him flying off the handle. That means we get a pass every 3 years to get triggered. Statistically, right? If we want to be like Jesus. You don't get to do that. It's not every day that you get to fly off the handle. It's not every week. It's not even every month. It's apparently not every year, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I was almost like rapping there for a minute, like Junior. Felt like the You Say, right? It was so elevated. It was so woke. You guys didn't even know what was going on. So Jesus saw this egregious error in the church, and he felt the need to visibly demonstrate his frustration. But it was just at one time, right? This wasn't how Jesus lived every single day of his life. Jesus, it says that he was full of grace and truth. Full of grace and truth. He was the meekest man, right? He was this meek and mild lamb is one of the expressions or symbolisms that's used to describe him. And so when we think that Jesus was triggered all the time, we've just got this misperception of who Jesus was. Another thing that was interesting about this is that he was correcting the wrong things towards the right people. Things that were wrong towards the right people. It's not our job. Like we talked about last week, Paul's like, hey, what business do I have judging those who are outside? That's God's business. My business is to judge us who are on the inside. Like, we have a level of accountability to each other. So Jesus is addressing the church, which he has every right to do. And so he did the right thing, correcting the wrong thing. And in this particular instance, he was pretty upset about it. 99% of his life and ministry were filled with these good things, these kind things, the lessons that he taught, the kindness and compassion that he demonstrated, the miracles that he performed. And we want to focus on this one isolated incident as if that is the norm, not the exception. And this is for me, right? I know y'all may not appreciate this because I don't know what your bend is. I don't know what you lean towards, but I lean towards, like, you know, a little aggression. Right? Is anybody with me? Am I alone? Oh, thank you. Thank you, E. Eric Basketball, ladies and gentlemen. He's with me. I'm telling you. So when you do get triggered, it has to be about the right things. And again, not all of the time. We can't get triggered about things that are personal preference. Right? Those aren't the things that are supposed to get us all bent out of shape. You can't get all bent out of shape just because somebody has an opinion that doesn't. Now, here's the thing. I think we get frustrated sometimes when people have differences of opinion because we just can't understand their opinion. Like, I get, I'm not going to say frustrated, but it's hard for me to understand, like, how in the world could you possibly come to that conclusion that is the best way to think or live your life or do this or do that. It makes no sense to me. And so because I don't understand it, it's easy for me to get frustrated with it. Anyway, so
That's the triggered exception, the woke exception to being triggered. The last point is this, and we're going to call this one woke of old. Woke of old. Do y'all know this whole stay woke thing? It is not a new phenomenon. In fact, it's not even a new expression. It's not even kind of this, it's something that was, you know, recently introduced into our lexicon. This is something that's been around for literally thousands of years. Romans chapter 13, verses 11 through 14, it says this. It says, "And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up." Now, what do you think that means? Stay woke, right? Thank you. Hey, I'm glad that y'all are tracking, right? So the hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. This is where it gets, y'all know what's so funny? We live in kind of this, again, highly offended culture where you can't even call wrong wrong anymore, like, because now if you say somebody's wrong, then you're judging them, which that's not even what that means at all, at all. Go read Matthew chapter 7, and then you'll never say, "Don't judge me, bro," again, because then you'll actually have a brain that functions, and you've read it, and you know what it means and says. So verse 13, it says this, "Let us behave decently, as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the flesh." So there are three couplings here, right? So he couples, interestingly, he couples carousing and drunkenness, which is kind of like this just wilding out lifestyle, right? Where I think so many of us have come from this, we've experienced this, where you can't even imagine your life without that thing, that high, that part of your party, right? I remember when I was stupid, it's so stupid looking back, right? How did this even happen? How do you get to this place in your life? As a teenager, I couldn't even imagine my life without alcohol. Couldn't imagine it. I couldn't envision myself having any fun in life unless I was drunk. Thanks for the support, everyone. Appreciate that. And so this is the carousing and the drunkenness that he's talking about. It has become so important to you that you cannot imagine your life without it. Not even that you can't imagine your life without it. You can't imagine your life having any joy or significance or meaning without it. And if you've gotten to that point, you need to wake up. Not in sexual... y'all ain't ready. Second coupling, he says, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, which is basically everything that we're exposed to over and 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 over again, right? Every time we turn on our televisions, we have the opportunity to be exposed to it. Every time you get on your phones now, there's an opportunity to be exposed to it. Every time you listen to the radio, it's these images, these messages, and all of these things that we are constantly inundated with. He was like, don't get sucked into the vortex, the trap of sexual immorality and debauchery. Now, we could get into specifics, but I don't think we have to. If you're looking at it and you know you're not supposed to look at it, don't look at it. If you're doing it and you know you're not supposed to do it, don't do it, right? It's the sexual immorality in a nutshell. There we go. Everybody good with that? Those are our baseline definitions. Jesus, I think the easiest way to understand what it means to follow Jesus, it's like, hey, if you know it's not right, if you know that it doesn't please the heart of God, then stop doing it. If you care for someone, just think about this in a very, very logical sense, right? If you care for someone and you know that what you're doing is about to hurt them, or the thing that you're considering doing is going to hurt very directly that person, you probably won't do it. Let's say I'm married. I am. Say I am, hypothetically. I am. I screwed up the other night, y'all. Listen, so a friend of mine, a guy that I know, he's a good dude, and he married a crazy woman. Yeah. So his name, no, I'm just kidding. So a good dude married a crazy woman, and so Shelly and I were kind of talking about it, and you know, he's just kind of struggled with it, and I said something stupid. I'm like, yeah, that happens sometimes. Good dudes marry crazy women. And she was like, oh, they do? So I wasn't talking about, I mean, so I've heard. That's what I've heard. It's, I don't know from personal experience, but I've heard that sometimes good dudes marry crazy women. And so anyway, sexual immorality and debauchery. And then the third coupling thing that he said was in dissension and jealousy. You know what's so cool about this is it kind of starts to transition from the physical to the mental and the emotional, right? Because then we have these strifes with each other, which is usually an emotional thing. The jealousy, the envy that we experience, which are they tend to be more of an emotional thing. And so he's like, hey, all of these things, let's not do those. Let's not get caught up in those. You know what's really interesting, though, about this particular passage? It says this. It says, let us behave decently. You know what it doesn't say? It does not say, let us behave perfectly. I thought that was really interesting because I think it's good for us to know, hey, man, you're not going to be perfect all the time. You are going to make some mistakes. But let's get back to it, right? Let's behave decently. Let's get back towards the path of decency. Let's not do the things. There are a couple of things about this that I think we should know, right? The first one is that the standard for our life is not necessarily the standard for everybody else's life. Let's not get sucked into this belief that we get to do what everybody else is doing it because everybody else is doing it. It's like your mama would used to say to you, right? Everybody else jumping off the bridge, you gonna jump off the bridge too? And as a fool, you'd be like, yeah. And so my mom was savage. She's like, go do it then, stupid, right? I'm like, no, mom, I'm kidding. I ain't trying to do all that. I don't know how we got off on. Y'all get me on some tangents and things that don't need to be talked about. So that's the first thing. Our standard is not the standard that everybody else lives by. We're called to a different standard. And if you are trying to follow, again, not perfection, and it doesn't lead to arrogance. We're not better than anyone. In fact, we probably struggle more than anyone because we're trying to live to a standard which we can never fully attain, and so we constantly are faced with and aware of our inadequacies, right? And so it doesn't lead to arrogance. Well, I don't do this, right? Because you're just setting yourself up. You're going to be the next one to fall to it, right? It happens so often. So many times you see people that when they live by this air of hubris, and they think that they're better than people because of the things they do or don't do. They usually fall to the things that they said that they do or don't do, for whatever that's worth. And so our standard is not the standard that everybody else lives by. The second thing that I think we should stay woke to is that you have an expiration date. Right? He's like, hey, salvation is nearer now than it was at the beginning when we first started this thing. The night is nearly over. The day is coming. That day is the judgment day. Now, this could happen one of a couple of ways. One, Jesus could come back. We think he's going to do that at some point. I don't know when. They've been saying he's going to do it for 2,000 years. He hasn't yet. So if he has time, right, it could happen here. It could happen now. It could happen another 1,000. I have no idea. But I do think he's coming back at some point. And if that's the case, then we will all simultaneously be, you know, jetted up out this mug, right? That's like New Age theology and terminology. Don't do that. It's just weird, right? So maybe that's the way it happens for us, or maybe it's your time and you expire. That's the most politically correct way to say you're going to die. And so if that's the case, that we all have an expiration date, that we are all at some point, this thing we call life, this journey here on earth comes to an end, when that happens, there's not going to be any negotiation. You don't get to go back and undo things that have been done. And you don't get to go back and do things that have been undone. You don't get to go back and mend broken things. You don't get to go back and finish things that you've started. You don't get to go back and tie up loose ends. When it's over, it's over. And the reminder for us is that, hey, because we're aware of this, because we're woke to this, then we live with a level of intentionality and with purpose, and we're going to make the most of this. No. Stop the obligatory clap. Stop it. Thanks, Shelly. Shelly's like a golf clapper. She didn't even know what that means. So Because we know that there's an expiration, because we know that our time here is finite, why don't we live in a way that we don't have to be embarrassed about? Why don't we live in a way that doesn't create regret and shame? You know what's funny? It's funny to me that we do things that we know we're going to be ashamed of down the road, but we don't feel the slightest bit of remorse in the moment, because you know what it is? It's the emotion that overrides the ration, and then in the moment, we can justify it knowing that there's going to be shame down the road. Why don't we stop living in such a way that we're going to have to deal with the shame and the regret and the remorse of the things that we do now? Why don't we start instead putting on the armor of light and putting aside the deeds of darkness? Just something to consider. Jesus said it like this, and this kind of comes back to the standard for us is not necessarily the standard for everyone else. If we're doing what everybody else is doing, how in the world could we expect to lead them? How in the world could we expect to influence them? You cannot lead the people that you're fallen with. Jesus, he said it like this, and this is so clever. He's like, hey, let me ask you a question. Can the blind lead the blind? Right? Can they, hey, I am blind, and I'm going to take my blind friend, and we're going to walk down the loop to Walmart. Probably not the best situation, right? Probably not the best way to live your life. And his answer was, well, of course they can't, right? They're both going to fall into a ditch if the blind try to lead the blind. And when we live in such a way that there's the regret, there's the shame, and we're following not the armor of light, but the deeds of darkness, we're not putting on the Lord Jesus Christ, we're not trying to behave and live decently, then really we've just become the blind that try to lead the blind. Like, we're foolish trying to lead other foolish people. There has to be something that distinguishes us, and we need to be woke to that, right? God has a plan for you. He has a plan for your life. He wants to use you to make a difference in the world that you live in, but you cannot make a difference in a world that you blend into. All right, what difference do we make if we look just the same, act just the same, walk just the same, and talk just the same? There has to be something about us that distinguishes us so that we can make a difference in the world that we live in. Amen? Amen. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you so much. God, we're so thankful that you love us just as we are. That is such a beautiful expression of the way that you accept us. All of our failures, all of our sin, all of our shortcomings, you love us. But you also love us entirely too much to leave us in our mess, to leave us in our brokenness. God, I love how your mission statement in coming to the earth was to bind up the brokenhearted, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to set the captives free. God, those who are bound by the things of their past and the things that they've done and the regret and the shame, that you came to set us free. God, you love us just like we are, but you love us entirely too much to leave us like we are. And we're so thankful for that. We're so thankful that we serve a God who can see past our sin and our mistakes and can see the future that he has in store for us. God, help us to respond to that. God, help us to not go to church, hear another sermon, hear another message about the goodness of God, and not have it make a difference in our lives. God, help us to be not just hearers of the word, but doers also. Help us to have a proclivity to action, Jesus. Not more knowledge, but why don't we apply what it is that we know? Let that be the wisdom that we live our lives by. Jesus, we love you. Thank you for all that you do. And it's in your incredible name we pray. And everybody said, amen.